Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Thanks very much for joining us today. We are recording this just after Thanksgiving here in November 2020. So hopefully you've had a great Thanksgiving, safe and lots of turkey. Today I have Nick Stice. He is Vice President, Commercial Banking Officer at Columbia Bank from Lake Oswego, Oregon, the Northwest. Nick, man, how are things?
Good. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I've only ever been to Seattle in the Northwest, beautiful city, but I hear nothing but great things about the Northwest. How long have you been up there?
My whole life.
Yeah, whole grew life. Up in Portland. All right. Yep. So you're a little biased.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, do me a favor. Say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro and then we'll jump into it.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here and Vice President, Commercial Banking Officer for Columbia Bank. Been there for about 4 years.
Cool. You married, dad, both?
Yep. Yeah. So married, happily married about 12 years and we've got a 2.5-year-old son and we have a baby girl on the way.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Good. Well, listen, it's nice to meet you, man. I appreciate the time here. You know, Nick, as we were speaking before I hit record here, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters. And that's really built on the foundation that from my chair, nothing's really given to any of us. And it all starts with what's up top. And with that said, I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You ready to roll?
Ready to roll. Thanks, Paul.
All right. All right, man. We're going back in time. That's what we do on this podcast. We're going back to 2010, University of Oregon. You're a duck.
I'm a duck.
If I have that right, you're a duck, right? I can't get that wrong. I can't say you're a beaver. That would be like a
no.
Insult, right?
Yeah, that's not going to work. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I'm glad I got it right then. So planning public policy and management, nonprofit management. I don't see banking anywhere in there. Do you recall a decade ago, as you were getting ready to kind of get out into the world, did you have a vision back then? Did you have any thought as to what you might be doing? And just what was your vision back then?
Yeah, that's a good starting place because that was a big a fork in the road for me as an individual personally, kind of pursuing my personal passions. You know, one of the things that happened to me was I started at the U of O in 2005. And that was the year that Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
And so it was my first term in college. And it took me a lot of work to get there to the University of Oregon. So my parents were pretty excited. And the first term of college, winter term, 2005, Katrina hits. I'm watching it on the news. And I'm like, man, I really feel like I should go down there and help. And I don't know how, I don't know in what capacity, but I really feel like I just had this call to get down there and help people. And so winter term, that next term, I told my parents, hey, I'm gonna withdraw from the University of Oregon and I'm gonna drive down to New Orleans and I'm gonna help out and live down wow. there. And they said, no, we're not real thrilled about that idea. We got you there. You know, we're super excited about you being at college and at University of Oregon. You worked really hard to get there. And one term under your belt, you're withdrawing from the program. So, and that was actually one of the things that the University of Oregon actually required. They said, well, if you're going to be gone and not able to take the minimum number of credits, then you need to fully withdraw. And so it was a big moment, you know, that was a catalyst for me where I had to kind of weigh the risk reward here, you know, and so I ultimately made the decision and jumped in a car with three people, that I did not really know. And wow. we drove, they felt a similar passion and call for going down there. And we drove down to New Orleans and got connected to a local relief effort that was happening down there and set up shop. And so it was a very unique experience.
That's amazing. I had no idea that you even did that. And so must have taken you a couple of days or so to get down there or whatever. And so yep. how long were you there?
Down there for about 6 months.
So about 6 months. Okay. So, you know, from the coverage that I saw, It certainly wasn't Jamaica, and you know, in terms of heat and beaches and beautiful weather. And so how did you survive? What did you do? And my God, it must have been so rewarding for you to do that, because obviously something was pulling you.
It was, yeah. No, it was, we got down there and it was like a third world country. You know, the levee breaking, the water flooding, all the parishes. It was a very eye-opening when we got down there. And one of the things that we did when we set up shop was we had no affiliation to any organization or, you know, no real strategy. We got down there, took an assessment of what was going on, and then realized that there was a lot of organizations struggling with red tape, not able to help people. And there was a few organizations that were really doing an organic kind of genuine opportunity to help people. And so we aligned ourselves with an organization called Campus Crusade for Christ. And we didn't have any affiliation with them at all. They just said, hey, we've got a warehouse and we would love to provide you guys some support while you're down there and have some volunteers connect with you and send volunteers. And so we said that, yeah, that would be great. So we ended up taking over a small warehouse that all the doors had been ripped off, you know, those big garage warehouse doors, ripped off from the storm. And so we had to board up the warehouse. And then they delivered mattresses that were still in the bags. And we just laid the mattresses on the warehouse floor with no walls and set up shop. And that was our living quarters. And so ultimately what happened was there was about nine of us that gathered together and we were all under the age of 21. Yeah.
I mean, Nick, I want to get into your story, but I'm fascinated by this here. And so you're there for 6 months, you're just a kid. And so like, really, like you don't know what you don't know, and you're helping out and something pulled you there. You know, with you being there for 6 months, did you get to connect with anybody that you know that you helped in terms of, and have you stayed in touch with anybody that you know that you helped them do something and that you've kind of stayed in touch at all?
Yeah, unfortunately I haven't. And here's why. When we got down there, we didn't know what we were walking into. And so the nine of us ended up helping facilitate, you know, at the time that the organization that we were working with said, hey, we'd like to send you about 2,500 volunteers. Can you facilitate that? And Paul, we're in an area where there is no electricity. There's barely potable water. You know, you've got tent cities being built and you're asking us to help facilitate and accommodate 2,500 people. And that was a big undertaking. And so, you know, we worked with FEMA, with the Marines, with the local governments, first responders, local business owners, to try to come together and create as much of an organized process to this chaos and this madness.
Right. Holy mackerel. Okay. So you're there for 6 months. Good for you for having the courage at the time to kind of defy what your parents, you know, wanted, because you're still under their roof. They're still kind of your guiding light. And you're like, no, Mom, I got to do this here. And then, you know, you went back to school, you finished your education. It was only a year of your life and it didn't derail you. It's not like you never went back. And then, so then you finished your education. And so now what'd you do once you graduated? Where'd you go?
Yeah. So what happened was, and I should clarify, my parents were very supportive. Once they knew, they heard the conviction in my voice, they were like, okay, we're with you. We're going to support you through this. Awesome. And what ended up happening, Paul, was we ended up facilitating over 10,000 students and volunteers coming through. And so we had a huge undertaking, and that took me back to U of O. I had this new perspective, right? I had this applied learning experience, this real life experience. And I said, I'm really passionate about leadership and organizational leadership and wanting to further develop that skill set. And I did do a little bit of business. You know, at the time I was actually in the business school when I withdrew from U of O. But coming back to the U of O was a big move. And here's why. I had to fully reapply for school. And so when I went and applied, I told my story about New Orleans. And the irony is that the school, when they said, you need to fully withdraw, they came back to me and said, this is an incredible experience. And we would want every one of our students to pursue, have the courage to pursue an applied learning experience. And so we're prepared to give you all the credits back that you missed out on and catch you back up. So you'd be on time, you know, caught up in the process. And I said, wow, that would be amazing. My parents were very excited about that. And then they said, here's how much that would cost. And I said, no, wait a minute. I'm not going to pay for that. I went on my own, you know, I took the risk. I stepped out, had the courage, you know, and I said, if I'm going to pay for something, I want you guys to turn your lights on, you know, your teachers to teach me new curriculum, something I haven't learned before. And they said, well, but it's going to put you behind by almost a year. And I said, that's fine. I'm willing to do that.
I'm because, 21. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've got time. And, and so it was a really unique experience. And you know, ultimately what happened was, the Planning Public Policy Management Group, the department there reached out to me and said, we would love to have you join our department. And, you know, here's the curriculum. I said, that's great. That aligns with what I'm passionate about right now and my experience. And then they gave me a unique opportunity to be the only undergraduate allowed in a graduate level program, capstone program. So, my experience led to opening the doors to opportunities I would never have gotten.
You know, man, I'm so glad that we don't script this because we're still on your school and it's like 10 minutes into it. It's like, I would have never thought we would be this far, but it's fascinating to me, obviously, what an impact this had on the rest of your life. And imagine if you hadn't done this.
Right.
You know, what might you be doing today? You would have finished earlier. Who knows where you'd be working? And you wouldn't have had that experience. It sounds like clearly it's molded you into, you know, you like your current state here. And so I find it amazing to me that the school was willing to say, yeah, listen, we're going to honor your credits, but we're going to make you pay twice or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can't make the connection, but it's all good. And so you said, no, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to go through my 4 years. They bring you back in, you finish your 4 years. And then how did you find banking?
Yeah. So at the time I was a poor college student and was looking to pick up a job.
Else?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, part of it was, I was passionate. I loved working with the business owners in New Orleans. Mm. My parents were small business owners. I just knew their language. And so I aligned myself with a small commercial community bank and was able to work while I was going to school. And so I did as much work as I could and shifted my credits around, but that gave me the introduction into banking. And what I got to learn was there's so many different industries that you touch, you get to work with as an extension of the management team, all these different businesses. And so it was a really unique experience to be able to apply my education, real life, real time, to what I was doing in the banking community too.
Right. That's amazing. And so, okay, so you're back in the Northwest here. You know, as you graduated in 2010, I have that 2010, right? Now that,
yep.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So even in the world, that still was kind of choppy times. Like right now, yep. We're going through a really rough time, but 2010 was no picnic either for anybody who remembers, you know, the banking crisis, the mortgage crisis of 2008 and 2009, that kind of range. And the world was still reeling. The ripple effects were very real. And the banking industry was one that was hit. It was hit hard. And in the public sense, it wasn't exactly we love banks, because the banks were considered the reason why we, the greedy people here, right? And so talk to me about how you manage that mentally, because there's a lot of public pressure about the banking industry and you're the reason why we shouldn't have had this mortgage, et cetera, et cetera. So how did you feel about that, about your industry being attacked a little bit at that time?
Yeah, that's a good question. That, you know, one of the things that got me through that was developing the real personal relationships with your clients. Mm. And when you establish a personal relationship, when you're not looked at as a commodity, but you're truly viewed as a valuable part of their management team, that helps you overcome kind of what's happening, the narrative that's happening in the world. And a lot of that during that time, I actually started my career in banking in 2007. So, you know, I did go through the financial crisis and working with clients. And, you know, I think the important thing is that a lot of that was that there was just too much leverage out there, and consumer leverage, business leverage. One of the things I'm passionate about, and this is going to sound counterintuitive as a lender, but is helping businesses have the right type of debt. And, you know, that's something that often leads to paying down your debt, not being in debt, and being stronger as a company because of it. And so, you know, that's really kind of what, during that time frame, I realized how important it is, for business, every business owner, to know your numbers, and for me to help them realize what those numbers mean. And so that's really what gets you through that, that narrative of, you know, we become the enemy, the weapon of mass destruction, as I think Buffett called it back in the day.
You know, Nick, as I'm getting to know your history here, I know that you worked at Pacific Continental for an extended period of time. You were at, is it Umpqua? Am I getting that
Umpqua.
Right?
Yep.
Umpqua. Umpqua. And then I know you were at, you shifted over to KPD Insurance. Any stories in there about the decisions to move on? Were you let go at any point? Did someone drag you? Do you remember why you decided to leave some of those organizations? Take me back to where you were and what the decisions were, because I'm sure after 6 years at Pacific and, you know, the better part of 3 to 4 years at Umpqua, you know, you're there for a while. You've established relationships, some clients, and I'm sure it wasn't just, well, let me just wake up and go somewhere else. I'm sure that it must have been a drawn out thought.
Yeah, it was. And there, the transition from banking into commercial insurance was at the time, it was partly driven by a large merger acquisition that occurred. You know, there was some cultural challenges there, as every merger and acquisition has within every organization. And so, you know, it kind of, it gave me the opportunity to do some soul searching and say, am I aligned organizationally, culturally with where I'm at right now? And at the time, I had a friend that was working, you know, he had, he's a partner in this firm, and he said, hey, I would love for you to join our firm. You work with the same clientele, you work with the same, it's very transferable skills. And so I would love for you to come over here and align with us. And so I did that. I made the leap, you know, and it was a very, thought out process, but it was still very, very, you know, I guess there was a lot of fear behind it, you know, and concern. You know, I was leaving an org, like you said, I was almost 10 years into a career in banking. Why would I go to insurance? And so, you know, one of the things that enticed me was ownership opportunity, within a firm, you know, things like that, where in a publicly traded company, you're a shareholder, you know, and that's great, but having ownership opportunity is a completely different model. And so that's what enticed me really to the insurance firm.
The move over, was it what you thought it was, or was it not as good or better than you thought?
Yeah, it was not what I thought it was going to be. So, you know, I transitioned over there. They had a great chief operating officer. As soon as I got there, within, I think it was 30 or 60 days, he had left. And so, you know, now I have a new person that's in charge of that organization. And yeah, the guy that left was the one that recruited me. You know, he outlined, here's the 3 to 5 year onboarding process for you. Here's what we're going to put you through. You're going to have to learn the language of insurance, you know. And so I went through a training program that they sent me through in Cincinnati, Ohio. It was a great, great training program. And it was all about high integrity selling. You know, it was all about getting, like you do with SOAR, is, you know, getting the point of contact, but developing a good process in methodology. So I enjoyed that. And then when I came back to apply that, it just didn't fit with the business model. Right. And so you go through a training, and if you don't have organizational leadership that's on board with that curriculum or training,
totally, it goes nowhere.
it derails. Yeah. And so that was my experience. You know, I had large commercial clients that I was trying to, you know, bring over into the firm. And, you know, I had a sales management process that was more, hey, we want you to go get super small business accounts, go out and, you know, walk down this street and get to the end of the block and tell me how many businesses you got. Right. And that wasn't part of the training curriculum. That wasn't part of the process. And so it really put me in a juxtaposition organizationally there. There was times when, you know, there was expressed frustrations on both sides. I just said, this guys, you sent me through this program, and now everything that I've done in that is not in line with what we want here. So I'm a little confused.
Yeah, fair enough. So when you've made that realization, I imagine that probably could not have been the easiest realization, because you've made the mental shift. It's not what you wanted. Columbia Bank, did they find you? Did you raise your hand? How'd that happen?
No, actually. So what ultimately ended up happening was, and this is pretty common within the commercial insurance world, is, you know, that's a tough job. I have a lot of respect for those guys. Mm. There's about an 85% washout rate when you join commercial insurance, because building a book of business organically to generate enough revenue to keep your lights on, you know, it's eat what you kill, it's feast or famine. You really have to be consistent. So ultimately what happened was, I exited, you know, that organization. And, you know, I was actually laid off. It was the first time in my life that, you know, somebody said, hey, you know what, this isn't going to work. Yeah. And
here's a check. Don't come to work tomorrow. Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I was, you know, that was jarring. I would say it was, one of the most annihilating experiences that I've ever gone through. You know, I'm a pretty driven, motivated person. And I usually find success when I pursue things, to not find that success was pretty, that was a self-realization that, was unique for me.
And how long did you find yourself, out of work and in this kind of, stupor, so to speak?
Yeah. About 60 days.
Okay. So a couple months. So when you think about 2 months in your life, it's an eye blink, but at that time it's like a lifetime, right?
Right. Yep. And so what I did, by the recommendation of my brother-in-law and, you know, my family, was I spent about 30 days just kind of recovering, right? Self-care. Hey, you've been through a rough transition, rough couple of years. Take some time and reset, hit the recharge button, reset, and then spend time building a list of all the people, you know. And, you know, it's been my experience, the more people, you know, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
And so, in what I did was I built a list and I met with 30 people in 30 days. And they were from every industry in my network. I utilized LinkedIn heavily during that time. I said, hey, I am in transition. I respect you. I know you are a performer within your industry. I would love to hear more. I would love to take you to lunch, take you to coffee, and love to hear about your experience in your industry, how you got there, what it takes, what's the belly of the beast really look like, and get to know what that looks like. And part of that was, man, it was cathartic. You know, it was a great experience. It gave me a lot of insight. And at the end of the day, I found that I was really, really passionate, not about banking, but about being involved with business owners in the management decision process. Hey, we're expanding. We have a strategic growth objective. We need capital to do that. I loved being part of that discussion. And so that's ultimately what drew me back to banking. And I aligned myself with Columbia Bank because it was the right size bank for me. You know, it gave me the opportunity to work with the clientele that I wanted to work with.
You know, Nick, I'm enjoying your story here, and I just connected the dots here a little bit that you've been able to establish your career pretty much in your own backyard. Like you're born and raised in the Northwest, there's enough commerce and presence and business there where you're able to do that. And I know we were talking, you're married, you're a dad, another one's on the way, and you had that experience in New Orleans. And so it's so cool that you didn't have to move to San Francisco or somewhere else, and you're still able to get what you want. And I know you've been at Columbia now for about 4 years, and good for you for making that shift. I'm glad to hear that the 60 days, well, at the time, probably felt like Everest, you know, like, how am we ever going to get out of this? And because, you know, I've been there myself, I've said this before in other podcasts, and I wrote an article on it that you know, the best day of my career was the day that I got laid off. At the time, it sucked because I got a check. I didn't know what to do. How much money do I have, et cetera, which wasn't almost nothing. It's like, what do I do? But had that not happened, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So it ended up being amazing, just like it sounds like it was a good thing for you because you found your groove at Columbia. And I want to chat with you about 2020 because it's just been one of those years, man. How have you balanced 2020? Are you working from home? Have you seen a drop off in your business? How's your family? Just how's 2020 been overall, you know, all things considered?
Yeah, 2020 has been a rough year all the way around, you know, from family life. There was a period of time where we were working from home quite a bit. But with the payroll protection program that was rolled out by the government, you know, it was a call to arms for the bankers. Hey, we've got to get this money out to business owners that are in need. Mm-hmm. And that really galvanized our teams and said, hey, we have to spend every waking hour that we have. We need to do shifts, multiple shifts. We need to do long hours, and get these things through the system so that we can help our clients and our communities that are really struggling. And so, you know, during that time, we were really working together in the office. Very scary too, because there's a human element to it. You don't know what at the time, we had no idea what coronavirus was. You know, we were all coming into the office, trying to maintain social distance, trying to make sure we were wearing our protective gear at all times. But we knew how important it was to get through this period, this big challenge that was given to us, and say, we got to get this money out to these folks who are in need. So it's been a bit of a mixed bag, but, you know, during that time frame, you also, it's challenging. Yeah. Their business is down. You know, you've got some uncertainty in the economy. And so that creates times when people say, you know what, instead of that big expansion within my business, I'm going to hang on to it, hang on to my liquidity. I'm going to stay, you know, stay tight. And so, the pipeline is down, but it's more, I think that's an appropriate thing to have happen right now. You know, that's the right thing to happen for a business owner to say, I think now is not necessarily the right time.
Well, you know, man, I have to say, I give you a lot of credit for your outlook on this. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, it sounds like your family's safe and, you know, you're trying to figure this out, but it doesn't sound like you've been personally, you know, impacted by this, which I'm glad to hear. And, you know, man, I really believe that in the end, 2020 will be looked upon as an overly positive year in the end, in terms of the impact. I mean, right now, as we're going through this, it kind of sucks. And I don't say that lightly because it's very real. But, you know, I think there can be some positives out of this. If you look at the social injustice that's happened this year, and people like myself, I've looked at this like, oh my God, I've become so much wiser about stuff like that. And you take a look at how we're engaging with people. I think the world's getting cleaned up a little bit better. And I certainly don't want to minimize what we're going through right now, but I'm optimistic that in the end, you know, my kids' kids and your kids' kids will look back and say 2020 was a great year because look at the positive impact it had moving forward, right?
Didn't agree more. Yeah,
I'm optimistic for that, really. And so, Nick, I've really enjoyed speaking to you, man. Thanks so much for the time. You know, I always like to ask anybody who's a guest, you know, what's your foundation? What's been your baseline?
You know, I've had a lot of great mentors and people in my life, my parents and everybody. I think one of the things that's been really important for me was a quote that I don't remember who the author is, but he said, leisure is a glorious opportunity or a subtle danger. Mm. And for me, that's been something that I've constantly had, you know, in the back of my mind is, you know, this is a unique opportunity where I can choose to check out, and I get the constant, you know, I've got the fire drills, the things I have to put out every day. I've got the things that are unimportant, that necessarily don't need to be addressed, and then I have the things that are really important that I want to focus on. But often people kind of fall into that fourth category where they just check out. They want to binge watch a huge, you know, a show, yeah. And they watch three seasons all in one weekend. And you know, for me, I think 2020 has been a great year for reflecting on that. That this is a year of time. We've been given time, yeah. And it's a glorious opportunity, or it can be a subtle danger. And so I've chosen to make it a glorious opportunity and to really invest in the relationships that I have, remind people how thankful we are for all that we have, and that this could be way worse.
Yeah, man. Okay, very well said. Listen, Nick, thanks so much for freeing up the time, man. I've really enjoyed getting to know you.
I appreciate it, Paul. Thank you.
You bet. All right, everybody, let's wrap up this episode. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week, and be safe, everybody. We'll be right back.